Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Modern Day Debate. I'm your host, Ryan. Tonight we have Wi-Fi Gospel versus Flying Spaghetti Auditor. It's going to be a juicy one. Does God exist? We're really excited to have you guys out. Jed for the first time. But to get us started, we have Wi-Fi Gospel. So whenever you're ready, take it away.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Ryan, for hosting. Thanks, Jed, for accepting the debate. Appreciate that. So God exists is, or does God exist is the title of the debate. And God does exist. Because theonomous epistemology is the necessary precondition for the possibility of knowledge. It's a little bit of a mouthful. I'll get into it. Without God, you're left with autonomous epistemology. You start with yourself, using the necessary tools needed to gather knowledge, and then try to justify those tools by referring back to the very tools you're trying to justify. It goes like this. You're lost in the woods, so you pull out the only compass you own. It points north. And to see if it's trustworthy, you shake it, lay it flat again, and look, it still points the same way. Before I go further, I just want to define both of these terms. Autonomous epistemology is the view that human reason, experience, and sense perception are the ultimate standard for truth. Theonomous epistemology is the view that God's revelation is the ultimate standard for truth. Theonomous epistemology is like this. Before pulling out your compass, you check the evening sky and spot the North Star. You line the compass up with that fixed celestial reference. When the needle disagrees with the star, you immediately know the compass and not the star is off and you adjust course. If there is a God who created and sustained the world and everything in it, a God who created us to know him, the world and each other, then we can use our senses, reason, memory, etc. to know things. We can justify the use of our reasoning tools, not by referring back to those tools, but by pointing to the creator of those tools. If you try to remove God from the equation, you end up in a vicious circle, unable to justify your epistemology. I've put together a few syllogisms to make my argument. The first one, if knowledge is possible, then God exists. Knowledge is possible, therefore God exists. This is known as modus ponens. And a lot of people have a problem with the first premise. They say, well, how does knowledge being possible mean God exists? It doesn't really connect in their mind, and I totally get that. So the question you want to ask is, how do we validate the conditional connection in premise one? And we do so like this. Either God is a necessary condition for the possibility of knowledge or not. It is not the case that God is not necessary. Therefore, God is a necessary condition. This is a disjunctive syllogism, and it uses a valid inference rule known as double negation elimination, which is upheld by the law of excluded middle. And it's A or not A, not not A, therefore A. Basically, just the law of excluded middle. And then the final syllogism I'm going to use is in the form of modus tollens that performs a reductio of all worldviews that exclude God. So if not not A, autonomous epistemology, means that that we can't, if that's not true, then it means that theonomous epistemology is true. So we must make autonomous epistemology not true. If autonomous epistemology is true, reason must justify itself. Reason cannot justify itself without circularity. Therefore, autonomous epistemology is not true. Something important to understand is that I just made a positive case for the claim that, yes, God exists. Now it's my opponent's job to try and poke holes in my argument. The only way he can do this is by showing that knowledge is possible without God. Let's quickly talk about how he will try to do this. He may appeal to empiricism and say we know things through our senses, but this assumes the reliability of the senses, which cannot be proven without using the senses themselves. That's circular. You're using your eyes to test your eyes. He may appeal to rationalism, claiming we know through reason. But again, this assumes that reason is reliable and attempts to prove that using reason and attempts to prove that using reason are equally circular. You're using your mind to validate your mind. In both cases, empiricism and rationalism depend on the very faculties that he's trying to justify. Unless he can escape that loop, he can't offer a non-circular foundation for knowledge. Maybe he will appeal to epistemic pluralism, claiming that no single source of knowledge needs to do all the work. That truth emerges from a web of methods: memory, intuition, testimony, perception, and so on. But pluralism doesn't solve the problem. It just spreads it around. If none of the sources can stand on their own, and each depends on the others for validation, then the system is just a loop of mutual dependence. You haven't avoided circularity, you've just made the circle bigger. Remember my compass example? You check the first one. Its needle settles on what it claims is north. After a shake, it still points the same way. Then you repeat that process with three more compasses, and each lines up with the others. At that point, you conclude, since they all agree, this must be true north. But all you've really done is assume that shared consensus equals accuracy. Even worse, let's say one compass points to a different north. How do you know which compass is right? Is it the three that agree just because they agree? Or is it the different compass because all three could have the same error? Here are some parallel syllogisms as an example of how my previous syllogisms work. The first one, the modus ponens. If an effect exists, then a cause exists. Effects exist, therefore a cause exists. A cause is a necessary precondition for an effect. Either every effect requires a cause or not. It is not the case that effects do not require a cause. Therefore, every effect requires a cause. This is a true dichotomy. If an effect could exist without a cause, the effect would be uncaused. An effect cannot be uncaused. Therefore, an effect cannot exist without a cause. This is a dismantling of the not a view. It isn't my job to show a possibility of an effect that doesn't have a cause. That would be ridiculous. However, my actual argument for God's existence, I do provide examples of how autonomous epistemology could try to justify itself. The problem is they all fail. And the prompt for this debate is, does God exist? So if you hear my opponent only talk about Christianity, he has come to the wrong debate. Debunking Christianity does not prove that God does not exist. That's the rest of my time. Thank you.
All right, you got it. Now, to be fair, you did have a couple more minutes left, but that's totally fine. We're going to hand the floor over to Jed, but I am going to let our audience know, if it's your first time here, do subscribe to the channel. We appreciate it. And hit that thumbs up like it owes you money. We're live right now, so the more of you that smash it, the more we're going to boost up in the algorithm, more people are going to see this debate. It sounds like we're going to have, a real good deep dive here tonight. So let's hand it over to Jed, and we'll get right to it. But Jed is brand new to modern day debate, so if you want to take just a quick second to let everybody know what you're all about, where they can find you, I'll give you 30 seconds, and then we'll start your timer.
Sure. Yeah, so my name is Jed. I'm from Flying Spaghetti Auditor. My channel is all about spreading skepticism and critical thinking towards superstition and bad ideas. This is my 10th debate, my second one on a neutral platform, my first time ever on modern day debates. It's an honor to be here. Thank you so much for moderating, Ryan, and thank you, Alex, for the debate. I think this should be a lot of fun. So today we're discussing the question, does God exist? Now, just to be clear on my position, I'm arguing in defense of the null hypothesis. I reject the claim that a God exists. That does not mean I'm making the positive assertion that no gods exist. To do so may actually be unwarranted, since the existence of God may be, in fact, unfalsifiable. Unfalsifiability is a characteristic of an incredibly weak claim, not a strong one. If you can't think of any possible way to prove that a God doesn't exist, that's a problem. What do we mean by God? Well, generally, it's not the job of an atheist to define God. However, there is one characteristic I insist we agree on, that God is a conscious agent capable of having thoughts of his own, who exists independent of all human minds. So if you claim the universe is God or God is love, then I'm going to reject your definition, since all you're doing is redefining God to mean something different, which we already have a word for, because you don't want to let go of the theist label. If you want to add more to your definition of God, like that he created the universe or is omnipresent, that's fine. This is just our baseline. However, giving your God additional characteristics increases our ability to reasonably dismiss his existence. While the basic creator God may be unfalsifiable, some gods we can be confident don't exist because they're self-contradictory. For example, God cannot be simultaneously omnibenevolent and omnipotent, given the copious amounts of unnecessary and pointless suffering in our current universe. This is known as the problem of evil or problem of suffering. If God is all good, then he would feel motivated to limit unnecessary suffering. If he's all powerful, then he's capable of ending suffering, but he doesn't. Therefore, an omnibenevolent and omnipotent God is impossible. What about free will? Doesn't that account for all the suffering in the world? Well, perhaps suffering inflicted by humans, but certainly not the millions of years of animal suffering, which went on for millennia prior to the evolution of humans. Animal suffering is a direct result of the system of predation designed by God, where organisms capable of experiencing fear and pain are forced to kill and eat each other in order to survive. What kind of cruel God designs a life form who can only survive by violently ripping apart other living creatures and eating their flesh? Certainly not a benevolent one. Another God which can't logically exist is one who wants a relationship with us and is omnipotent. This is known as the argument from non-resistant non-belief, the mere existence of open-minded individuals who would believe in and worship God if only he would reveal himself. Demonstrates that any God who does exist is either incompetent or unfriendly. A necessary prerequisite to becoming my friend is demonstrating to me that you exist. Since God refuses to reveal himself, he clearly doesn't care about me or doesn't want a relationship with me. Oh, your heart's just too hard. Really? Even when I was a Christian for 20 years, I sincerely believed then. I prayed to God all the time and never heard back. Oh, you didn't pray the right way, or you belong to the wrong denomination. It's always a failure on my part, despite Christians never being able to demonstrate God with any actual evidence. Some people claim to have seen God, but conveniently forget to snap a photo. In a world where everyone has a video camera in their pocket, surely someone would be able to catch God by now. Evidently, he's the reigning champion of hide and go seek. These two arguments debunk most traditional versions of God, like the one of Christianity. Despite this fact, many Christians still cling to their religion and justify it with presuppositionalism. God has to exist, otherwise you can't account for the laws of physics, logic, morality, or knowledge. This is known as the transcendental argument for God, or TAG. It sounds smart on the surface, but has absolutely no depth whatsoever. It relies on a conflation between descriptive laws and the phenomena they describe. What grounds physics? The natural world. The laws of physics are humans' attempt of describing the way matter and energy behave in space. Before there were any human minds, there were no laws of physics because there were no minds to conceptualize those laws. But matter and energy still behaved in the same way. Presupps often claim God grounds morality. This is a joke, right? The God of the Bible grounds morality. The same God who endorses buying and beating slaves, advocates for genital mutilation, demands animal sacrifice, regards women as subordinate to men, calls homosexuality an abomination worthy of the death sentence, demands women be stoned to death if they can't demonstrate they were a virgin on their wedding night, which is impossible, by the way, commands his followers to slaughter innocent children and babies, tortures innocent people for no reason, like Job. Instead of punishing people for their own actions, he uses collective punishment and generational punishment. He created his own arch nemesis, who he lets run around the world deceiving people, so he has more souls to torture for eternity in hell. He discourages cooperation, teamwork, communication, and unity. He demonizes critical thinking and independence, and instead glorifies and rewards blind obedience to authority, even when you're commanded to commit the most unthinkable act imaginable, like murdering your own child. Now, my definition of moral is actions which enhance well-being. If your definition of morality is whatever aligns with this God's opinion, then I want nothing to do with it. You can't account for knowledge if there is no God. Well, I would disagree with that claim based on my definition of knowledge, which is beliefs held to a very high level of confidence. In the past, my opponent has defined knowledge as justified true belief. I'm not a fan of this definition, but I'm willing to follow the argument based on his working definition. Can I ever be justified in believing something is true? Well, no, not if your definition of justified precludes our ability to use our senses to justify our senses. No, I can't account for knowledge. I admit it. But neither can my opponent, neither can a theist. This argument is really about hard solipsism. I can use my senses to gather information about the world around me. I can compare my sense data with sense data from other people. This is called independent confirmation. But I'm using my senses to evaluate their sensory information. So how do I know these other people even exist? Maybe what I think is reality is actually a fake reality, like the Matrix, a simulation, or a video game. Maybe I'm just a brain in a vat. I cannot prove this isn't the case. My only tools for collecting information are my senses. So I have no choice but to assume reality is real as a matter of practicality, and then use my senses to collect and evaluate information in my apparent reality. This way I can avoid pain and death, which feel and seem completely real based on all the available evidence. I believe claims with evidence. There is no evidence that there's a meta reality outside of our own, which is more real than this one. There's no evidence that any magical gods exist in some invisible dimension. Both of these claims are unfalsifiable. Christianity does not solve the problem of hard solipsism. If Yahweh was actually real, but this reality was fake, then it's entirely possible this God is merely part of the fake reality. Despite him knowing everything there is to know within our reality, Yahweh or any God could still be barred from investigating outside of or escaping it. And like us, he would have no reason to believe there's a meta reality above his own. You know, if only we could ask God what he thinks about all this. Oh, well, I suppose we can, but I doubt we'll hear anything back because gods never talk to or interact with anyone in any demonstrable way.
1 minute.
My opponent presupposes a God and claims that his God is a grounding for knowledge or logic or insert metaphysical concept here, but what he's really doing is presupposing all the same things I do, the rejection of hard solipsism, the axioms of logic, and adding an additional presupposition, God. This God concept doesn't explain anything or deepen our understanding of anything. Bringing up the issue of hard solipsism is an attempt to put all claims on an equal playing ground. Because if he can convince you that reality isn't even real, suddenly, talking donkeys and magical sky daddies don't sound so far-fetched.
All right. Well, I take it that's your ending there. So we are going to kick it into open discussion. I'm going to hand it over to Wi-Fi Gospel, but I'm going to remind the audience, once again, we are a neutral debate platform here at Modern Day Debate. We do hope you feel welcome. Definitely smack that like button if you're hanging out in the live chat right now. Help boost us up in the algorithm and make sure that lots of people see this debate. I'm sure that it's going to be a very fruitful one based on the demeanor of our guests here tonight. And once again, we will do a Q&A at the end of the debate. So if you have questions for either of our speakers, if they say something that just has you banging your head on the wall, get it into a super chat and we will ask it at the end of the show. So without further ado, thank you everybody for being here. I'm going to hand it over to Wi-Fi Gospel to respond to some of what you just heard, and then feel free to jump in, Jed, you know, at a cordial time.
Cool. So I just want thank you for your opening statement, Jed. I'd like to talk about your definition of knowledge. You said that it's beliefs held to a very high level of confidence, right?
That's right.
So if I hold the belief of the prompt tonight, that the answer to the prompt tonight, does God exist, is yes, and I've already won the debate, and I have high confidence in that, do I know it?
You might say you know it. You might think you know it. People can think they know things and be wrong.
But your definition of knowledge is beliefs held to a very high level of confidence.
Yeah. Okay, so sure. I would say that you know that you have won the debate. if you're very confident that you've already won.
And that the prompt of the debate, does God exist, is true. It's yes.
Well, just to be clear, people's knowledge can be wrong. So I'm rejecting the definition of justified true belief. So my definition of knowledge is just beliefs held to a very high confidence level. So, you know, millions of years ago or thousands of years ago, people knew the world was flat. People knew that, but that's not the case. So knowledge can be wrong under my definition.
Okay. Well, I mean, just to not to say this in a condescending way at all, all of philosophy would disagree with your definition of knowledge, just to put that out there. Every epistemologist, pretty much ever, atheists, most epistemologists are atheists, and they would have a lot of problems. And I'm going to point a few of those problems out. Do you know anything to be true?
Under my definition of knowledge, sure. Now, I don't think we can know anything with absolute certainty other than that our own minds exist. So I have to have a mind in order to have thoughts. So other than the existence of my own mind, I don't have absolute certainty about anything, but I have varying degrees of confidence levels.
Well, it's interesting because earlier you said that you have to assume that your minds exist, that you can't actually justify it.
No, I said I have to assume that my reality is real, but I would say that I have certainty that my mind exists, because whether this reality is real or not, I still have a mind. It's just being fed fake information.
Can you explain that?
Could you justify that? Yeah. I can't justify that this reality is actually real. I could be a brain in a vat. I could be in a simulation. I could be a character in a video game. But under all those examples, I still have my mind. My mind is the only thing I can be confident, 100% certain, actually exists. Because if I don't have a mind, I can't have thoughts. I can't think about whether I have a mind unless I have one.
Okay, so what you're doing now is just asserting that you have a mind. I would like a justification for it.
Okay, I'm thinking right now, and having thoughts requires a mind. Minds are a necessary component of thoughts.
Okay, when you say I'm, that first word, are you assuming the self when you say that?
Yeah.
Okay.
I exist.
You're assuming that you have a mind.
Yeah.
In order to prove that you have a mind.
I would say I don't need to assume it because I'm directly experiencing it.
But then
go ahead.
Because when I asked you about the I'm statement, I'm is referring to a self, and that you have this mind contained within the self.
So my physical body, under hard solipsism, could be an illusion. For all intents and purposes, I feel like an ape. I look like an ape. I have a body. I've got 10 fingers, but this could all be fake. And I could just be, my mind could be zeros and ones in some computer somewhere, but then that physical computer would be, or I should say the software in that computer would be my mind. So no matter what version of hard solipsism you can point to, the fact that I'm able to have thoughts means I have to have a mind, whether this reality, this physical reality, is actually real.
Okay. I don't want to get too caught up on this. I do want to push on it just one more time. This is similar to the cogito, I think, therefore I am, correct?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. The problem is the cogito has been debunked over and over again by many different philosophers by saying exactly what I said. I is assuming the self. So I think, therefore I am, is actually circular. You're assuming the self in order to prove the self.
How could I say that statement unless I have a self?
Well, that's exactly the point.
If I don't exist, I couldn't say anything.
Well, that's not true. Things that don't exist say stuff all the time.
Like what?
Like certain characters in cartoons, they don't exist in reality.
Yeah, but I am, from as
Does
far
a cartoon
as I can tell,
have a mind?
What's that?
Does a cartoon have a mind?
No, cartoons are just drawings and depictions of characters made by humans. So they're not having actual thoughts of their own, which I am. And I know that because of my direct experience.
Okay, here's actually a more modern example. Do you think ChatGPT has a mind?
I don't know. I'm not a software engineer, so I don't know.
I'm going to jump in here, guys. Not that it's not interesting. Just if you could explain right quick, Wi-Fi, where you're kind of going with this and how it ties into whether a God exists or not, just to try to bring it back into our main topic.
Thank you, Ryan. So what I'm trying to do here is get to the fact where Jed has kind of given up all knowledge in the justified true belief sense, except he does go back to this one thing that he says he has knowledge of, that he has a mind, and knowledge in the JTB way, not in his definition. The reason I'm pushing back on this so hard is because of the argument I made in my opening, that if knowledge is possible, then God must exist. And the only way to disprove this, as I explained in my opening, I don't want to go too far into it right now, is if that Jed can prove that knowledge is possible without presupposing the existence of God. And so that's what I'm trying to get out of him now. So, Jed, you have a justified true belief that your mind exists.
Yes, I would say that's the only justified true belief that I have.
And this is the last time I'll push on it, because I have some other things in your opening I'd like to get to as well. But the only thing that you have given us for that is, I think, therefore I am.
Mm-hmm. I don't think I need anything else. If I could, I'd love to try to steel man your position, and then you let me know if I have it accurate, just so I fully understand it.
Go ahead.
So I can't verify my senses with my senses because that's circular, but sure, you can verify your senses with something else, divine revelation. God is giving you information and you use this information to validate your sense data.
Well, yeah. And I wouldn't say that senses give us infallible knowledge. I would say they give us fallible knowledge, that we can reasonably know things in the fallibilist understanding of things with our senses. But yes, the reason that I can validate my senses is only if there is a God who has created us to know him and to know things through our senses.
Is God giving you information directly? Like, can you give me can you give me a specific example of something you know because God has revealed it to you?
Yeah, so two things I'll say to this. One, it's not necessary for the argument to hold, because the argument is simply there must be a God who can reveal things to us such that we can know them, otherwise knowledge is impossible, which is self-contradictory. But just for an example, I would say the fact that he exists is a direct experience, because not only has he made everything, but he sustains everything and he's within everything.
How do you know that? How do you know he made everything?
Right, because if he didn't, knowledge would be impossible.
Well, you're just saying that, but
no.
How has God revealed to you that he is the creator of everything?
Again, God has revealed things to us such that we can know them for certain. If God has not created everything, he would not be able to know everything. If God cannot know everything, he cannot reveal things to us that are indefeasible, meaning that they could not possibly be wrong. The reason he couldn't do that is because if he didn't know everything, he wouldn't know all the defeaters for a claim, right? So if God does not reveal to us things that are indefeasible and would count as true knowledge, then we wouldn't be able to know anything, which is, again, self-contradictory.
Maybe I'm just missing something, but can you give me like one specific example in like the physical world? Like, you think right now that you're in a debate. Has that been because of your sense data? Has that also been verified by God? Like, did God tell you you're in a debate as well?
No. So like I said before, I know that I'm in a debate under the fallibilistic interpretation of things, right? There's fallibilism, there's infallibilism. Christianity doesn't see, or I don't see a distinction between infallibilists and fallibilists like most people do. I think both of them are useful. Fallibilism states that there are things that you can know which you're not certain of. You would fall into that category with your definition of knowledge. Infallibilism says you can only know things that are infallible, that you cannot be wrong about, like your mind example that you think you can't be wrong about. So I hold both in the sense that I think there are things we know infallibly and there are things that we know fallibly. And I think most people are coming around to that position because it's more reasonable. Now, as for your question, I know I'm in a debate, yes, by using my senses, yes, by using my reasoning, and this is fallible knowledge. Could I be wrong about it? Sure. There's a high likelihood that I'm not wrong about it. The reason that I can trust my senses at all, that I can justify them, being able to use them, is because there is a God who has created me and in an intention in order for me to know things with my senses. If that's not the case, you cannot justify your senses.
Yeah, I already admitted I can't justify my senses.
Right, so you can't disprove.
I can't disprove hard solipsism, but you're just asserting that your belief that God created everything and gave us the ability to have knowledge makes it so, but you haven't demonstrated that in any way.
Right. So demonstrations don't have to be empirical, correct?
Can you give me, well, maybe, I don't know. I tend to believe things that have empirical demonstrations.
But you believe all sorts of things that don't have empirical demonstrations.
Like what?
Like human rights.
I would say I believe, not to go too much of a sidetrack, I believe that humans should have rights because I experience empathy towards other people and want to promote well-being.
Right.
But I don't think a human right is something that exists transcendentally or out in the cosmos somewhere. I don't think it's a thing unto itself. It's just something a human's made up.
Right. So there's no empirical demonstration of the actual human right.
I don't think a human right is a thing that exists. It's just ways that we treat each other and ways that we say we have to treat each other.
So human rights don't exist.
Not in a physical sense or not onto themselves. Human rights are not something that humans discover. These are something that humans create. So these are abstractions made by humans.
Right.
In the same way that God is just an abstraction. He's just a made up entity that doesn't actually have any physical or tangible reality to him. He's not real. Or there's no reason to think he's real, I should say.
Okay. The reason I asked about the demonstrations is because you do believe that things can be demonstrated through logical arguments, right?
Can you give me an example?
Sure. If Socrates is a man, Socrates is mortal. Socrates is a man, therefore Socrates is mortal. Is that a demonstration that Socrates is mortal?
No, because in order to believe that Socrates is we need more evidence than just that argument that Socrates was a real person. And just saying he's mortal, he could be a fictional character. So if I say Batman is a man, men are mortal, therefore Batman is mortal, I mean, that it's a valid syllogism, but it's
interesting.
It's not talking about anything that's actually real.
If we can't use logical arguments to demonstrate things, then why did you earlier say that God's omni attributes are self-contradictory? Are you saying that doesn't actually demonstrate anything?
Well, we can't believe that I guess what I'm trying to say is that we can't believe Socrates exists simply because we can plug his name into a valid syllogism. We need evidence beyond that.
Right. But that the argument itself had nothing to do with that.
If
Socrates is a man, then he's mortal. Socrates is a man, therefore he's mortal.
I can be convinced of claims based on logical arguments.
But we can't know them to be true.
We can't be absolutely certain about any claims.
Are you absolutely certain about that?
No.
Okay, so you could be wrong that you can't be absolutely certain about any claim.
Could you be in a matrix right now?
Please answer my question first and I'll answer.
Sorry, what was the question?
So you could be wrong that you can't be absolutely certain about any claim.
Yes.
Okay, so then your original claim that you can't be absolutely certain about any claim is wrong.
No, it could be wrong.
No. You said can't. Can't is a universal term, meaning there's absolutely no way that you can have absolute certainty about anything.
When I say we can't know anything with absolute certainty, I'm saying I'm not convinced that we can know anything with absolute certainty.
And what does convincing you have to do with the truth of the matter?
It doesn't. Whether I'm convinced of a claim or not has nothing to do with the truth of the matter.
All right. So you're saying I'm not convinced.
I could be wrong about everything. I could be in a fake reality.
Could you be wrong about that?
Yeah. I could be in a real reality. I could be in a fake reality. I can't disprove hard solipsism. And I don't think you can either, just by appealing to a God.
No, I just think this demonstrates the absurdities of the entailments of atheism.
Well, hard solipsism isn't just a problem for atheism. It's a problem for theism as well. Because if there is a God, he could be a part of a fake reality too, right?
So what you just did when you said hard solipsism isn't just a problem for atheists, it's a problem for anything. You're actually climbing out of hard solipsism to say that. You can't know anything outside of your own self if hard solipsism is a problem for atheism. So you saying it's a problem for other people, you're climbing out of your hard solipsism to say that. So you can't do that.
You're in the same hole that I am of hard solipsism.
You can't say that if you think that hard solipsism is a problem for your worldview.
Sure I can. I just did.
All right.
But how about this? You can't say that hard solipsism is a problem for me under your theist worldview. You can't climb out of the hole
You admitted that you're in the hole, right?
I admit that I can't solve the problem of hard solipsism. I could be a brain in a vat, and so could you.
So then you don't know that you're in this debate?
Well, under your definition of knowledge, no. But under mine,
the universal definition of knowledge.
Well, I don't like that definition because I don't think I can know anything with absolute certainty because I can't disprove the problem of hard solipsism.
Okay. So again, back to, I do want to make sure we're staying on. I do think we're on topic, but I do see Ryan here.
Yeah, it's all good. I was going to jump in and just say, I think we've already kind of established where we stand on the solipsism argument. So,
now, one more issue about hard solipsism, if I could bring it up.
Oh, I guess we're not. That's no problem.
Just going to ask, if God, let's say that a God exists, couldn't he be a part of the fake reality that you think you're a part of? But then there's a meta reality that's even more real than this God.
Yeah, but that meta reality would have to have a God that is the precondition for intelligibility or knowledge.
Why?
Otherwise, you end up saying things like, I don't know anything, which is a contradiction. Would you like me to explain how you not knowing anything is a contradiction?
I don't have absolute certainty about anything other than my own mind existing.
All right.
I don't see how that's a contradiction. For all intents and purposes, I accept reality as real. I assume that it's real as a presupposition. And you do the same thing.
So do assumptions justify beliefs?
Do assumptions justify beliefs? Define justify.
All right. Is it a good reason to believe something?
In the case of the rejection of hard solipsism, I would say yes, because I have no reason to think hard solipsism is actually true. It's just an unfalsifiable claim.
So you personally have no reason.
The reason I reject hard solipsism is because I experience pain and I look around at other life forms that are evidently real as far as I can tell. They seem to experience pain. They seem to experience death. Death seems like a very real thing that could happen to me. So as a matter of practicality, I'm going to do my best to stay alive within this reality because it seems like it's real and it's the only reality that does exist. I have no reason to think there are any other realities.
And so it's all based on seemings.
Yeah, it's all based on sensory data.
So then God seems to me to be real because when I live my life in accordance with his will, my life gets better.
How do you know what his will is?
Hold on. I don't need to. It seems to me.
How does it seem to you?
It just does.
Well, my
seemings tell me.
Sure. When I say reality seems real, what I mean is that I'm using my sight, sound, my senses to collect sensory data about my reality, and I can physically touch things. I can demonstrate them to other
all
people
stuff
who
you
also
can't justify,
appear to be
right?
real. What when you say God seems real? Are you using your sensory data to observe this God? And what does the observation look like?
Do my reasons do what I use to understand the will of God? Do those things themselves need to be justified in order for me to use them?
Yes.
Why? You just listed off your sense data and all this other stuff that you already admitted was unjustified.
Well, under your definition of justified, I have no other tools other than sense data. So it has to be, I'm stuck in the circle. I admit it. I can't get out of this circle that is justifying sense data with sense data. That's all I have.
So
but you're
if
claiming you have something else. You're claiming you have divine revelation. How do you know what God wants? Hold on. Do you know what God thinks? How do you know if God wants you to think something's real? How does he explain that to you?
Well, the problem is that if you admit that all the things you use to have knowledge or to have these highly confident beliefs are all unjustified, they're all stuck in a circle, then anything I say doesn't matter because I can just say pizza sleeps fast under the much, therefore the West. And that proves God exists because it's completely unjustified.
Now, what you just did was appeal to hard solipsism in order to make every single claim equally valid or equally sound.
I appeal to your standard.
What you did was say, if you can't demonstrate that hard solipsism isn't real, that your reality is really real, then anything I could possibly make up is also real, like a God. You could just make up a God and assert that he's real. And that seems like that's what you're doing.
The words hard solipsism never came out of my mouth. Here's the thing.
They came out of mine, but that's what you're describing.
No, you said that you can use your senses to come to true beliefs or knowledge, right?
I can use my senses to gather information about the reality that I appear to be living in.
Okay, and can you have knowledge based off that information?
I can have very high confidence that my beliefs about reality are true. But I can't mean, have again, absolute certainty because I can't beat this problem of hard solipsism, but neither can you.
No, when you, so you're afraid of absolute certainty, right?
I'm not afraid of it. I just admit that I can't have it.
Okay. So you're, I'm not trying to like provoke you when I say that. My bad. I'm just.
No, you're good.
You're not comfortable with the fact you don't think we can have absolute certainty about things. So in order to avoid that reality that you say is there, you're trying to change the definition of knowledge, right? And you're saying that it's just a highly confident belief. But I've already pressed you on that multiple times. And this is, as we see in real time, the problems with having a definition of knowledge that is just a highly confident belief. Because then everything everybody believes is knowledge.
Not necessarily. I think that it depends on the confidence level of the knowledge. And okay, the way people use the word knowledge, like I could say, I know the sky is blue and I know my wife is being faithful to me. Now, I might have different confidence levels about those two things because I could be wrong about one of them. So people could say they know things, but there's a varying level of confidence.
Right. But if I say I know Hillary Clinton is the president of the United States, is it true or false, that knowledge claim?
That is false, as far as okay. I can tell.
And how do we know whether it's true or false?
We can. This is going to sound like a horrible answer. We can Google who's the president of the United States right now, and it'll say Donald Trump.
So I understand what you're saying. I'm not going to nitpick that. because Google's always right. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, exactly. That's the one thing we can trust and we can use to validate our senses.
All right. So when you say, now are you saying that you know that the answer, that the statement Hillary Clinton is the president of the United States, that statement is false? You know that it's false?
Well, I'm supremely confident that that statement is false, but I could be living in a fake reality and the real reality might be really, really similar to this one where Hillary Clinton is the president. So there's always a chance I could be wrong.
So this is the issue. Nothing is true. Everything is just, well, I think this is true and I think that's true.
Well, things are true or false within our reality. We just have to assume that this reality that we experience is real first.
An absolute certainty?
No, it's an assumption. I assume that reality is real as a starting point. I admit it.
Okay, but so you're then I assume that God is real. Right.
Here you
and
go.
Now, okay, so we're both just justified in our beliefs.
Well, here's the thing. We're both assuming that reality is real. You're adding an additional presupposition.
Is your assumption justified?
I have no choice but to assume it. And evidently, everyone else does the same thing. But no, it's ultimately not because I'm using my senses to prove my senses.
So we can believe things based on assumptions that are not justified.
There's only four things that I think we should assume, which are that the rejection of hard solipsism and the three axioms of logic.
Is that itself an assumption?
Is what an assumption?
That we should only assume four things?
That's my best understanding of the minimum number of presuppositions. We should have as few presuppositions as possible to avoid assuming things which might not be true.
Why?
Because if we assume things, then we might be wrong. But
so you might
four,
be.
Yeah, I could be wrong. But these four things are the minimum starting point of presuppositions that everyone has. You also presuppose the same things, but you also presuppose God and claim that he's a grounding for these things with no justification.
Real quick, Ryan, are we going to have closing statements before or after Q&A?
I usually like to do them after the Q&A just because sometimes the audience will end up digging up some things that we didn't really touch on throughout the open discussion. But I would like, not to call you out here, Jed, during the intro, you guys are doing your intros, of course, but we haven't gotten to really address a lot of what you had said in your introduction there, Wi-Fi Gospel. So I do want to hand the floor over to you and kind of allow you to go through some of the arguments you presented in your intro.
finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ziprecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Intro, and then try to get it back and forth on that and put you on the offensive for a bit there, or on the defensive, I should say. So I'll give it over to you there, Wi-Fi, and we'll keep on rolling. But yeah, after Q&A generally, unless there's a time constraint.
Yeah, no worries. And I just, the reason I asked is because I think that we did have a good discussion about knowledge and stuff. And I think that we're kind of maybe hitting a wall, and I think it might be more useful of time to go into something else. Did you want me, you said, to go to question Jed's opening?
No, I was saying that some of the things that you'd presented in your intro, I don't think we've really kind of addressed yet. So if you want to maybe touch on some of the things that you had said in your introduction that, like I said, we haven't really gotten into. Go ahead, Jed, if you have something you want to launch pad into, that's okay.
Sure. And
I agree that we've kind of hit the wall on that one.
And a big part of my opening statement as the rejection of the claim is that I'm bringing forth very, very common arguments for God's existence, like the morality argument, which with Alex didn't make today. So, but I'd be curious, since you are a Christian, right? So I'd be curious to hear some of your responses to some of these moral issues with Christianity.
I mean, it's kind of off topic. The only thing I would say is I don't make the argument that objective morality proves God. I would say that you can only have objective morality if God exists.
Maybe this is a direction we could take it. Can you give me a characteristic that you think this God has, other than that he created the universe?
I mean, it's not really pertinent to the topic. The morality of this God, like, God could be evil and still exist, right?
Well, we don't have to necessarily talk about morality. We could talk about the tri-omni characteristics, but just tell me anything that you know about God. Like, do you know anything about
that
God?
He exists.
Okay. He exists.
I did want to go back to your introduction there, Wi-Fi. If you can give us a couple ideas of how you think this God manifests, how they communicate, some of the things that we like to touch on here at Modern Day Debate, just so we can kind of get into the meat and potatoes of it all, right? If you don't mind.
Yeah. So specifically, the argument doesn't rest on how God does these things. Rather, it rests on there must be a God who does reveal himself, because if not, then knowledge is impossible, which is why we've been talking about knowledge this entire time. And to be fair to Jed, I do think that the discussion has been centered on my introduction, because even though there was a lot there in different syllogisms, it does ultimately end up on the problem of knowledge. We could go back to knowledge, but some things that Jed had said in his opening that I wrote down. We could go through those as well.
Sure. One really quick question too about your main argument for God. You said God has to exist, God has to, in order for us to have knowledge, God needs to reveal. In order for us to have knowledge, God needs to reveal information to us. Now, I would say that under that definition of knowledge, I would just reject it. We've already been through all that. Well, let's talk about how God reveals information to us. Has God ever revealed anything directly to you? Have you ever heard God's voice? Have you ever seen writing on the wall? Or do you get like a fuzzy feeling inside that God's trying to give you a message? Like, what's the mechanism through which God communicates with people?
Yeah, and I totally understand what you're trying to do here, but it's just not pertinent to my argument. The argument is that there must be a God that has revealed himself in such a way that we can know things for certain in order for us to have knowledge. It doesn't matter how he did it, in order for the argument to work.
Well, my claim is that he hasn't done that. And the version of knowledge that you're claiming we have to have, I don't think exists.
But when you say he hasn't, all that is that it seems to you that the information you've been presented with is enough to make you unconvinced that he has, not that he actually hasn't.
Sure. I have no reason to think God has ever spoken to anyone or interacted with anyone ever.
Right. And so this is just the Matt Dillahunty, I'm unconvinced, which isn't an actual argument.
Well, you haven't presented any examples of how God reveals himself to people.
No, I've presented an argument that you've been unable to defeat.
I wasn't attempting to defeat the argument. I accepted the alternative of the argument, which is that we can't have justified true belief if we justify our senses with our senses, which means
the problem is
we're stuck in this hole of hard solipsism, which I can't defend. I admit it.
Yeah. So your worldview entails a contradiction.
No, my worldview entails the honest admission that I can't solve the problem of hard solipsism, but I don't think you can either just by asserting that you can't.
Every time you open your mouth, you're making a knowledge claim and then denying knowledge in the very next sentence. That's a contradiction.
Every time I open my mouth, I'm making a claim, but I don't know if I would call it a knowledge claim. I'm not claiming absolute certainty about anything other than that I exist.
Do you know that you're making a knowledge claim? Or do you know that you're making a claim?
I'm supremely confident that I'm making a claim.
Do you know that you're supremely confident that you're making a claim?
No, I could be a brain in a vat being spoon-fed information that's not real.
Okay. So you're just denying that you're making statements that are true, or that you're just denying that you're making knowledge claims.
No, I'm not denying it. From all intents and purposes, it seems like I am. I feel, and based on all the sense data I've ever collected, it seems like I'm sitting here in a room talking to you through a computer and having a debate. That's what it seems like I'm doing. And
do you live your life like that?
What's that?
Do you live your life like that?
I live my life under the assumption that this reality is real.
Right. So like I don't know if you have children or not, but if you were to teach your niece or your nephew, say, or just a random friend's kid, I don't know. if you were to teach them things, would you teach them things as if you knew them?
I would teach them, if I had a young nephew or niece, which I do actually, I would teach them, I would probably just not even mention hard solipsism to them until they were a lot older and more capable of understanding these kinds of concepts. I would just assume that reality is real, and I would interact with them in a way that assumes that they're a conscious agent like me, both basically on equal footing, experiencing the same real reality.
Yeah. I would say that we just, like you said, we don't live the way that you're arguing.
We don't live as if hard solipsism is real. I don't live as if I'm a brain in a vat. Right. Exactly. But I have no reason to think that I am, which is why I just assume that I'm not.
Because, respectfully, you don't want to believe in God. And to suppress that truth, you'd rather say crazy things like, I don't know anything, rather than accept the fact that God exists.
That's an interesting road to go down. We could talk about, you know, the idea of you don't want to believe in God.
Sure. Yeah.
Sure.
I want to believe in... Well, this is a quote from Matt Dillahunty. I want to believe in as many true things and as few false things as possible. Now, I assume that reality is real because it appears to be so. I don't believe in God, not because I wish he didn't exist, but because I've seen insufficient evidence to warrant belief. And this argument that I can only know things if God allows me to know things or reveals information to me, I reject because I've never seen any demonstration that God reveals information to people. I've never seen any demonstration that God is real and communicates with anyone. So if I don't ever see any reason to believe that God actually interacts with people, why would I believe that?
Right. So let's say the Christian God revealed himself to you. Would you worship him?
No, I would believe he exists, but I wouldn't worship him because of all the issues I mentioned earlier about morality, like how he supports slavery and commands people to kill babies and those kinds of things.
Yeah. And I would, we could totally do another debate on morality sometime. I would like that.
Sure.
But the problem is, imagine the arbiter of morality, right? Because you believe in subjective morality, maybe? Or are you objectivist?
I don't think there is an objective reality. Yeah, I think all morality is subjective.
Okay. So like if this God existed and he revealed himself to you, would you, it would logically follow that morality is actually objective.
No, because I think in a reality where God does in fact exist, I think morality would still be completely subjective in the exact same way it is now. Because right now, basically with morality, we have to appeal to a subjective goal like well-being. And then once we agree on a goal, then we can assess different actions and their effect on well-being. But if a God exists, and if we followed what he wanted and what he said, all we would be doing is accepting what this God says is right and wrong. We would just be using God's standard as our subjective moral framework. But there's no reason for me to care what this God thinks. It's just his opinion.
So using a standard is always subjective?
Any standard we make for morality is subjective.
I'm just talking about in general. Forget morality for this question. Is using a standard always subjective?
I would say yes, but once we agree on the standard, then we can make objective assessments. Like, for example, if we have a ruler, the inch is subjective. But once we agree on what an inch is, we can objectively say this object is 3 inches long. Right. Similarly, if we agree that well-being is the foundation for morality, we could say punching someone in the face is immoral because it causes unnecessary suffering.
So how is anything objective then? Because everything is based off of a standard.
Well, I define objective as existing absent a mind. When we talk about morality, it seems like what we're talking about is ought statements.
You assume that reality exists apart from the mind of God to get your definition of objective.
If reality is God, then to reject that definition of God. If you're saying the universe is God.
No. I'm just saying that that reality reflects the mind of God in the same way that the standard of morality does.
If God's standard of morality is that we should run around killing Canaanites and drowning puppies and
that's a red herring.
Having slaves, then I want nothing to do with what he considers morality.
Let me put it this way. Instead of trying to convince you that under Christian morality, it is objectively true that morality would be objective. Instead of trying to do that, because I don't think I'm going to be able to. If God came to you and you knew that everything he said was true, he says, I exist, worship me, and morality is objective. And this is the standard of morality. And he has followed that standard completely. You would still say, I don't like that. I'm not going to worship you.
Well, when you say you know everything he says is true, how would I know that? Couldn't a God lie to me? If a God existed, couldn't he lie? And couldn't his definition of morality differ than mine?
It's a hypothetical.
Yeah. Okay. So hypothetically, if God came to me and said, I exist, I want you to worship me, and everything I say and do is automatically moral because it's within my nature, I would say, I reject that definition of morality because I care more about well-being. If you don't want to call what I care about morality, the promotion of well-being, then I don't care what objective morality is. All I care about is the promotion of well-being.
I do want to be fair here and just jump in and say that the prior question that we were trying to settle on is, whether you would want to believe in God and where Wi-Fi gospel, I know he's making more of like a Christian argument now, but you know, overall it is, does God exist? So I'm going to pass you back the question, but I'm going to review the poll right quick. So right now I'll go from the least to the most. So does God exist? I have, I'm not a Christian, but God exists at 3%. All right. At 7%, we have, I'm agnostic. I wear diapers in bed. All right. I'm just, I did put that, but all right. I don't want to mean to pick on the agnostics. I mean, there's a lot.
It's all right. Jed doesn't like the term agnostic either.
Yeah. I'll just go off on agnostics really quick. I think most people who use and who self-identify as agnostic are actually atheists who are too cowardly to use the label atheist.
Ooh, he's coming right for you. Now,
you either are convinced
that God
exists or you're
not convinced. You just lost all
your supporters
in chat, by the way.
All right, well, I will be fair that as far as the term agnosticism goes, I mean, you can be agnostic about, things within, a sect of belief. So I don't think it's really a fair term when you're having these discussions. But, some people do self-describe that way, and I don't think that it's really applicable because you can be agnostic within Christian sects, within atheist sects, there can be agnostic. So anyway, I'm going to keep reviewing the poll and then we'll try to get back on brand here. So at no way, we have 22%. And then coming in at the most, we have 67% that say Yahweh, God exists. All right. That's my little stupid pun for the night. Okay. I'm a dad. Nice. I get away with it. All right. Once again, if you're hanging out in the audience, smash that like button. And I'm going to go back over to Jed and just say, so the question that was posed was, would you want to believe in God? So let's say that all like beyond what we currently have, as far as, you know, this built argument for Christianity, if it was just a general God and let's say everything sounds great on paper, you're looking at it, you're like, this is great. That's fantastic. You know, is there a part of you that would still want to kind of like push against that because of the authority of it, or like kind of give us a sense of if there is a part of you that doesn't want to believe in this structure?
I think that I want to believe in whatever is true. Whether I worship God or believe in God are two completely separate questions. So if there is a God, then regardless of how moral this God is or what religion he's associated with, I would want to know the truth about whether he exists or not, or I would want to have confidence in the proposition that he exists if he does in fact exist. But whether or not I would follow what this God wants me to do or worship him is a completely separate question. Now, if there was a God who I really liked and was a real moral guy and a real nice dude, I don't know as if I would worship him, because I think just the idea of worship is kind of it's just like a toxic way to behave. Worshiping something seems to me like you're degrading yourself. It's like I'm putting this thing of so high value, I can't possibly ever acknowledge the possibility that it could be wrong or it could be immoral in any way. So I think that worship is unhealthy, even if it's worshiping something good.
Well, let's go down that avenue then. I think we can definitely spend some time talking about worship. So yeah, Wi-Fi, your thoughts?
On worship in general, I think that obviously humans were created to worship. I think you could even make the argument from an evolutionary standpoint, because of how much worshiping we've done over the last, I don't know how long we have documented of it, probably 10,000 years or something like that, of just straight up worship. Like the idea of somebody not worshiping a deity is fairly new. So I think whether it's God created us to worship him or evolutionary we're designed to worship, I think that if you replace God, if you deny God, you end up worshiping something anyway, whether that be yourself, your family, money. Worship comes in all kinds of different ways.
Let's see, Alex, you said that you're convinced humans were designed to worship because we have worshiped a lot in the past.
No.
Oh, sorry. Maybe
that's like a starting point that I believe humans are created to worship. That's not like an argument that they are because we have worshiped. I'm just saying evolutionary, it could possibly be a good argument that it seems like that's in our DNA.
You could say that any behavior that humans participate in is in our DNA or because of evolution. But I don't know as if that's necessarily a good argument, because humans behave in all sorts of crazy and atrocious ways. Like humans own slaves and kill each other. And I don't think you or I would say that humans were designed to kill each other or own slaves.
You don't know how hard it is for me to hold back on the slavery stuff, because I could go for days on the slavery stuff, but this is not that debate for that.
We could have fun with it. I don't know. I'm not opposed.
We can do a real quick five.
Why wouldn't we? I mean, come on, everybody's doing it.
I mean, if you want, it seems like, look, my main argument was about knowledge, and I'll say more about it in my closing statement, but we hit the knowledge topic with a hammer quite a few times. I mean, if you want to talk about slavery,
sure. Well, since you're a Christian, so I assume that you think that it's okay to own slaves and beat slaves.
Just before you start framing his worldview, let's let Wi-Fi, make his case before we start saddling him with other things that might be pertinent.
I am a Christian. For anybody interested, I was a Protestant Calvinist for 10 years. I am inquiring into the Orthodox Church. It's going to be a long journey. If you want to learn more about that, you can always hit me up. I don't know if I can say the Discord on here publicly, but hit me up on Discord at Wi-Fi Gospel and I'll talk to you there.
Yeah, you can give out your Discord handles. That's fine. You're here to promote yourself.
I didn't
right?
want to give like a personal server Discord that's not mine I'm always in. Just people are weird on the internet, right? If you ever want to talk about orthodoxy and stuff, you can hit me up in there. But I do, for the purpose of this discussion about slavery, I do believe that the Bible is God's word. So if you want to talk about biblical slavery, then we can. But the question I would have for you is all slavery wrong?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
All right. So what's your definition of slavery?
My definition of slavery is owning another human being as property.
Okay. And that's it.
We could add more to the definition, like owning a human being as property, who you buy or who you capture from another city, or who you beat, or who you make do. Maybe we could say a human being who you own as property and make work for you.
Okay. Because then it seems like if you own a child that was born to you from a slave family, then that wouldn't be a slave under that definition, because they're not doing anything for you. You didn't buy them.
Sure. Okay. So we can stick with my original definition then. A person who you own as property, that's a slave.
Okay. What does it mean to own someone as property?
The same thing it means to own a cow or to own a piece of farming equipment. You own a tractor. So this tractor is mine. They're not an autonomous agent. They cannot quit whenever they want. They do what I say. And if they don't, then I'm going to beat them with a rod.
Okay. So does that mean you can do whatever you want to them?
No, not under the biblical law.
No, I'm just saying under your definition.
Well, under my definition of a slave, it's just someone that you own as property.
Okay. So can a state own property?
The state can own land as property and other things like cars. Sure.
In a prison system, does the state own the prisoner?
It's hard to answer. I would say our prison system does have a lot of overlap with slavery, where someone is forced to stay in confinement. They can't escape. And oftentimes they're forced to do labor with either very little or no pay at all. So I think there is some overlap between imprisonment and slavery. Sure.
So even if prisoners aren't forced to do labor, a lot of that stuff is like down south in America, where they do, like, you're up at 6 a.m., you're working the fields, or there's going to be problems. You're going in the hole, right? But even if they're not forced to labor, ultimately labor is a means to get something, right? To get wealth in some sort of way. Like, they don't make people work just to work for the sake of work. They make people work to gain something from them. So in the same way, even if I have a prisoner who doesn't work, but I use keeping them confined in a cell for 23 hours a day as a way to get taxpayer money, I would think that there's the same economic benefit. Even if it's a not-for-profit, like, state-run prison, there's still job creation. There's still plenty of people getting paid. There's still contractors making money doing work at the prison. There's tons of economic gain inside of the state-run public prison system, right?
Sure, yeah. And there's there's a lot of corruption where prisons want more prisoners. So then they're in cahoots with, say, law enforcement to arrest more people and judges to convict more people of crimes worthy of getting them in prison. So yeah, there's tons of corruption in our government. Absolutely.
But even then, it's not about the corruption, because we would both say the corruption is bad, no matter our views on the prison system. Even without the corruption, just a morally working prison system, there's still economic gain. And plenty of it from taxpayer money.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
What's the point?
I'm just setting this up. What do we do with criminals if not imprison them?
Rehabilitation. Okay. Financial fines.
Is that not, wait, just financial fines? You would be okay with, like, a murderer just getting like $100,000 fine?
It depends on the severity of the crime. If someone jaywalks, then I think they deserve a less. They could get off with a financial fine, sure.
But let's say heinous crimes, rape, unaliving people, that kind of stuff. What do we do with them? If we don't use the death penalty, if we're just going to rehabilitate them, doesn't that involve the same thing pretty much as a prison system?
You know, I'm not a huge fan of the U.S. prison system, and I admit I don't know what the best solution is for people that commit really heinous crimes. The reason that I think putting someone in prison may be justified is because this person could be a risk of committing another similar act in the future. So if somebody is a murderer, you know, maybe if they murder someone, we could say this person has the capacity for murder. They demonstrated that they are a murderer. So to keep the rest of us safe and to prevent them from doing it again, we're going to remove them from general population.
My whole point to this, to wrap it up, is that there's only one thing you can do, and it's a form of slavery, no matter which way you put it. So I don't think that you can actually say that all forms of slavery are bad, unless you want to say there are no punishments for crime other than fines and stuff like that.
If there's a way to rehabilitate even a murderer and help them see reason and help them become a better person to eventually release them back in society, I'm for that. So if
right, but
I would rather someone's experience in prison not be like torture, but be more geared towards trying to make them a better person.
But the rehabilitation itself, I mean, some people want to be helped. Some people want to be helped, but their behavior, like, they just can't help. Like, they want it, but their actions don't match their wants. And then there's, like, you know, really bad people who just don't want it and don't care. And anyway, but even with the best case scenario where someone wants it and they're willing to follow the rehabilitation program, it's still a form of slavery.
I guess you could say that. Maybe slavery
is not bad, right?
If someone is a risk to other people, I think that we have a justification for removing them from society. Now, a lot of the slavery mentioned in the Bible, like that in Deuteronomy 20, is people who didn't commit some heinous act, people who aren't murderers, innocent women and children who just live in a different town and are forced to become slaves under threat of, they don't really get offered a choice. They just, there's a
specific situation.
Yeah, so in Deuteronomy 20, verses 10 through 15, God says to the Israelites, all these other nations that are nearby to you, how I want you to treat them is to march up and give them a peace offering. Say, you need to become our slave, or else we're going to kill all of the men in the city and then force the women and children to be slaves anyway. And so these are people that didn't do anything wrong. They are not a danger.
That's an assumption.
Israel. Do you think that children are a danger to the Israelites?
No, I think children are under the headship of their parents, and that you can't just take parents away from children and expect good things to happen.
Well, that's what God advocates for.
What do you mean?
God says, kill the men, kill their fathers, and then force the children to become your slaves.
Yeah, so that's not leaving the child. I meant, if you don't take a child as a slave, for example, and you kill their parents, what do you think is going to happen to them?
To the child?
Yeah. Think they're going to be okay?
Well, they're probably going to be really sad because their parents are dead, but that's going to be the case whether you make them a slave or not. I think.
Well, no. Like, if you just leave a 6-year-old to defend for themselves, come on, man, they're not going to make it, right?
If they're all by themselves in the desert, completely alone, definitely not. But if they have a society to live inside of.
Yeah, so the societies get decimated and the survivors flee.
Why do we need to commit genocide on these societies in the first place? Why don't we just leave them alone?
That word on the live. I don't know. Not my rules. Up to you. But I don't think that it's G-side in that sense. Like, for example, if hypothetically speaking, because we're speaking about the Bible, if God owns the land and he tells somebody, hey, that's my land, get out, should they get out?
What does God need land for?
Doesn't matter. It's his. He wants it. He has a people he wants to put there. He owns the land. Hey, you. Leave this land. Is that okay to do?
No, I don't think so. Okay. Uprooting an entire civilization because, my favorite group of people needs to live there instead of you. I think that's incredibly immoral. Why can't God just love everyone equally?
Again, based on your presupposition of subjective morality, it's just your opinion.
Based on well-being.
Not based on well-being.
That's what my morality is based on. Is well-being and the promotion.
We're going to go deep into the debate here. Well-being is the worst principle to use on morality.
Really?
Ever.
Why?
100%.
This is a great place to go. Let's do it.
Yeah. All right. What's wrong with well-being as a foundation?
Because it's
for
under
morality?
A utilitarian ethics, and utilitarian ethics is easily defeated with one simple hypothetical. You're on an island. There are 6 people. One of them is a doctor. One of them needs an organ that the other 5 people have. If the doctor takes the organ from those five people, am I saying this right? No. All right. This is what I'm saying.
I think you meant the other way.
Yeah. One person has four organs that these other four people need to survive. Without those four organs, this one person's going to die. For the well-being of the group, should this doctor cut that person open and take their organs?
Just to make sure I'm understanding the hypothetical, there's one person with four organs and four people that need one organ. So are we justified in basically killing one person to save four?
Yeah, take a kidney, take a lung, take the heart, you know. And
I would say no, because that's because a violation it's not about well-being. Of bodily autonomy. So
right.
I think that you don't have the right to hurt somebody else just for the sake of someone else's well-being against their will. I think that's causing unnecessary harm and suffering is part of my definition of well-being.
Right. So here's the thing. This is where it gets tricky because here's the other side of the coin. Now you're saying, well, it's not really about the well-being of the group, because otherwise, if it was about the well-being of the group, you would have said off of that one person and let's have these four other people survive, because that would make the group survive better. Their well-being would be better overall. Now here's the other side of the coin. Do you put one person in prison who's committed a crime? Actually, don't even use that. Use a better hypothetical. They've committed no crime, but a rabid mob has joined outside of your office.